Why don't you introduce yourself and tell me your name, when and where you were born?
My name is Rocky Harden. I was born in Portsmouth, Ohio, 1989, so 30 years old now.
And where do you live now?
Right now I'm in West Virginia, a little town over Cedar Grove. So,
why don't you tell me how you got into wrestling?
Always been a fan. Watched it since I was growing up. Moved to West Virginia when I was like 16, 17, and knew that there was a place in Ohio in my hometown that trained guys. So I had a really good job. I was 19 at the time, living in Logan County. Got a hold of the people in Portsmouth, and they're like, yeah, we'll totally train you. So I left everything behind. I had like $200 maybe, and couch surfed till I got a job in my own place and started training, and it just consumed me. Like, it just completely took over. Like, any free time that I had, I was studying wrestling tapes, and YouTube was a lifesaver.
And when you were a fan, what were you watching?
When I was a kid, I was watching WWE. I was a big, big fan of people like Triple H and the Hardy Boys. So anytime those guys were on TV, like, I was glued. I was glued to everything they were doing. Pretty much everybody when I was growing up, like, anybody that was on TV, like, I was completely struck by them. And to be able to work with them now, a lot of the guys that I watched when I was growing up is mind-blowing. So pretty blessed.
And so did you ever go to live matches as a kid?
No, actually, I went to a few of the independent shows in my hometown, but never made it to like a WWE house show. My mom had a very hectic work schedule, so every time they would come in, it's like, you know, she couldn't get off work, and it was usually in like Columbus or Cincinnati, so I wasn't able to, but I got like every pay-per-view, so I kind of made up for it.
So how did you get involved with ASW? Was that your first wrestling, was with ASW?
Yeah. So I trained a place in Ohio, and then I moved back to West Virginia, and then I went back to Ohio to train at another facility. And in the meantime, when I was back here in West Virginia, I met the promoter of ASW, Gary Dameron, and he kind of was like, oh, this is a scrawny kid. I was like 160 pounds at the time. And he was like, yeah, okay, sure, I'll use you, kid, you know. But then he needed some people for a battle royal. And he was like, hey, you know, he's been helping out with posters and doing all this stuff and driving over to Gilbert, hanging posters up and advertising. He's like, I'll give Rocky a try. So got in there, battle royal, guy hit me with a clothesline. We went over the top rope. I done a backflip and a half. My head bounced off of off the floor. I had a little bit of a concussion. That was like the welcome to the business, kid, you know. So, and it was December 26th. And in 2009, there was a bad snowstorm. So a lot of places were shut down, and people couldn't get to their homes. And I was driving back from Gilbert with a concussion. I don't remember driving much that night, but thankfully I didn't wreck. So wow. Yeah, it's crazy.
And was that your, did you have a wrestling, I know it's not called persona, what's the term in the biz?
Like a gimmick? Yeah, like a wrestling? Yeah, what was your gimmick? At the time I was Rocky Rage, and that was it. And I had a pair of like gold pants that I wore, and like it was crazy. But once I got out there, it was, you know, it hit. I was like, okay, this is what I was supposed to do. And I didn't have like any cool gimmick. It's just like, and here's Rocky Rage, and no one knew who I was. So that was pretty fun.
And what could you describe the gimmick, or how has it evolved?
Oh my gosh. I went from Rocky Rage to let's see, maybe the month following that, I was Pure White Trash, Rocky Rage, and I had like these cut off blue jeans and like a airbrushed wife beater, and pretty much any kind of stereotype, trailer park, white trash, stigma, I tried to find and, you know, embrace. And I've done that for a while. Got bookings, and looking back, it's like, oh my gosh, what was I doing? But people liked it, and I was the bad guy in doing that gimmick in like Danville. And it was crazy because Gary's like, this is not going to work. You're not going to get booed. Everyone's going to cheer you. And no, I actually went out there, got some heat. The people were like, boo, I hate you, blah, 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 giving me crap, which is my job, you know. So it's like, those are my cheers, right? And then in one match, it just changed. I went from being like one of the most booed bad guys to getting getting over with the crowd as a babyface. Like, the crowd made me the good guy. And then from there, I started doing like crazy strikes. So I wanted to drop the white trash thing and get some.
What is crazy strikes?
Just like different like ways to hit people, like different counters and like punches, elbows, forearms.
Like playing dirty?
No, not necessarily. Okay. Just like I started getting obsessed with like people that would do like cool kicks and cool like forearms and elbows, and it's like, okay, well, how can I pick somebody up and throw them off my shoulders, and as they're falling, be able to, you know, hit them in the face on the way down or knee them in the face. So I started, and I don't even know who came up with this, but it was before a show, and someone was watching me do a practice match, and like, oh my gosh, he's a specialist on knocking people out. And I was like, knockout specialist, there it is, that's what I am. And I went as the knockout specialist, Rocky Rage, for a long time, like years, all the way up until I think 2017, something, yeah, 2017, and 2018 actually is when I started the thing that I'm doing now, and which some promoters are like, you can't say that, you can't do this, because I'm the savior of wrestling. I lost the title at ASW, and I was like their top good guy. Mm-hmm. So the promoter's like, and I was begging him, like, hey, let me do this as a bad guy. No, he wouldn't do it. And then finally one day he's like, you know what? Maybe we'll give it a shot. And I said, yes, here we go. This is it. And it was a weird night because everybody was, like, really nervous. And, like, all the boys in the back was like, are you serious? That's happening tonight? And so everybody, like, went up top. There's this, like, we call it the bird's nest, the eagle's nest. And everybody went up there and was, like, watching out. Because they're like, this is crazy. He's done this for years. He's the top good guy. How is this going to work? So I snapped, and I went heel, bad guy. And my thought process was, I'm going to be delusional. I'm going to be, you know, something's not quite right. So I'm so full of myself that I am saving wrestling. So I'm the savior of wrestling, which got over big time. Ended up getting shirts and can't keep them in stock, so that's pretty cool. But yeah, so now I'm the savior of wrestling. So white trash to a striker to a guy that might have, you know, split personalities.
So what do you think switched with the white trash? Like, why did you get over?
I don't know really, because at first it was I was doing a really good job. The best part. To, like, the best way to learn in wrestling is for you to start out as the good guy, and you can learn from working the bad guys. They lead the match, they all of this, and I started as the bad guy, and it's like, okay, so I'm learning everything on the fly, like learning it backwards. I'm like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And I don't know how it got over with the crowd, because I was a nervous wreck. I was like, there is no way I'm going to be able to do this. And then, like, the people just went from, like, hating my guts to I think it's because they saw that I was actually putting in a lot of work. And doing a lot of or having a lot of good matches and not afraid to throw my body out there. Mm-hmm. And I think they just went from, oh yeah, it's fun to boo the bad guy, to my like, hey, look, respect, and clap, clap, clap. Yeah. And I think that's what the transition was. But I was just, I don't know, I just got tired of like the blue jean thing. I was like, man, I just want to get rid of that. Because at the time, like, what you wore was like a big thing with a lot of the veterans. And nowadays, most of the guys wear blue jeans, so it's it's crazy now. But yeah, I just, I don't know. I just wanted something different.
But it seems unusual because usually it is working class characters are pretty, you know, their faces, right?
Yeah. You know, Dusty Rhodes, you know, Son of a Plumber. Yeah, usually because they can relate to that. Mm-hmm. They see those guys as one of them. You know, they can be one of the guys sitting next to him in the crowd, you know, or someone at the, you know, the local bar or something, drinking a beer with them on a Friday night. Mm-hmm. And people can get behind that. So, and that could have been something too, but it was crazy because, like, I was supposed to be the guy that, like, opened the show and just, like, okay, he's just a filler, you know? Yeah. And then they were like, Rocky, Rocky. And I was like, what is happening here? It was crazy.
So does the promoter control the storyline?
Yeah. Usually with ASW, Gary Dameron's the end-all be-all. You know, he does everything for the company. Well, like, he has help, too, like, with setups and stuff like that. But that waits on him to come up with ideas. And the cool thing about Gary, and there's some other promotions too that's like this, is you do have leadway. Gary has a lot of trust with me now, going on 10 years working for him, but to where I, you know, can throw out ideas, you know, for other guys too, not just myself. But yeah, he's the one that usually comes up with everything, or me and him will sit down and we'll try to come up with some stuff. But yeah, he's usually like the booker is the person that takes care of all of that.
But it also seems like the fans have some say because they're kind of.
If we're doing a storyline or we're doing some kind of angle, anybody, and the fans aren't getting behind that, that's getting scratched, you know? Because at the end of the day, it's whatever makes the fans happy. That's what the promoter is going to go for. A smart promoter listens to the crowd, just like a wrestler. You know, if I'm in there and I'm listening to the crowd and they're not into if I'm giving them this kind of match, and let's say I'm doing, you know, chain wrestling, mat wrestling, and that crowd's not into that, mm-hmm. Okay, well, let's switch it up. Let's try some dives and some high-flying stuff. If they're not into that, well, then, hey, look, I'm getting ready to do a comedy spot real quick, and it's going to be, ha-ha, look at me, look at Rocky, he's an idiot. But yeah, you have to be able to listen to the crowd and book according to what they want. Some promoters don't do that, and you can see like a decline, mm-hmm. on some of their stuff. And some promoters, and I mean, everybody has done this. I mean, even like WWE, people complain about like, oh, well, we don't like so-and-so, and why is he getting pushed? And it's like, there's a reason. Maybe they're, you know, selling tickets, or maybe they're doing something. You can't please everybody. Mm-hmm. You know, that's something that I've definitely found out in wrestling, is not everybody. If you have 400 people in your crowd, there's going to be like two people that's going to be very vocal that they don't like, whatever. Yeah. But yeah, a promoter will listen to the majority of the crowd and go from there. Mm-hmm. So Gary does a really good job of doing that.
So what's the scope of independent wrestling in West Virginia right now, would you say? So there's ASW. Are there other – that seems to me like the one I see the most, but are there other – is it promotions or companies?
Yeah, there's quite a few, actually. There's ICS. They run in, like, Dunbar. There's Pro Wrestling Conquest. They're in Canal City. You have a company called UWA that runs around the Hurricane area. Let's see, there's Mega. There's quite a few promotions. And it's crazy because, you know, 2 years ago, wrestling was different than it is now. It's changed dramatically for the better.
In West Virginia, or like independent wrestling?
Independent wrestling, like wrestling as a whole, mm-hmm. but that effect is carried over to West Virginia. Mm-hmm. And I've seen shows that would draw, you know, 15 paying people to now they have over 100 paying people. Mm-hmm. And I'm starting to see fans go to a lot of different shows. Okay. Like, they will follow me and one of the other wrestlers, Huff Manley. We were at a show in Ohio a few months back, and there were people from West Virginia that drove all the way to Ohio to watch us wrestle. So it's crazy. And the fans are like, they're turning into, it's almost like a wrestling's turning into like this, like a cult following, to where it's like, hey, look, we're going to support these guys. We're going to buy their merch. We're going to go see them. We're going to, I mean, it's insane. I'll sell out of my shirts within a month. Like, I'll get an order in and a bulk of them is gone. Like, the first show that I take them to, they're, it's amazing. But yeah, like, the fans are more rabid. They're more, they're into it, and they know, I think that most of the fans know, like, what wrestling is for the most part. And you're starting to see more people, like, show respect to that instead of it being like, oh, well, that stuff's fake. And it's like, well, look, I've had 1, 2, 3, 4 teeth fixed. I have 4 more cracked in the back. My knees are shot. My neck shot. It's like, and now you're starting to see people that's like, hey, look, no matter if the finish is predetermined, like, you guys are breaking your backs for this. And, that's the cool thing. So people are starting to understand, like, okay, yeah, it might be a worked environment, but that's a beating that they're taking night in and night out.
Why do you think it has a sudden boost in popularity?
I don't know. I know, like, there's a new company that's starting. It's called AEW. There's a lot of talk about that. That's blowing up. They got their own TV deal. They're selling out arenas in, like, minutes. So I don't know if it's like, well, what's going on over here? What are we seeing? Like, is this what's the big hype about this? And then they see, like, okay, look, if they used to watch WWE, they'll say, okay, well, that's a little bit watered down, but this stuff over here on the independents, not so watered down. Mm-hmm. A lot more risk taken, a lot more dives and hard hits and crazy moves that you don't even see in WWE. And I think a lot of people that were wrestling fans that kind of dropped out because they didn't know anything about the independents, now with social media and the influence of that, that's getting it out there more in front of, like, some of those older fans. It's like, hey, that's pretty cool. That reminds me of when I was a kid and I watched wrestling, and that's what I want to support. And I hear that a lot. Like, I'll hear guys say, like fans will come up and tell me, like, hey, this is kind of like the stuff that it reminds us what we watched when we were younger. It seems more edgy, more raw. And I think that's what people like. It's not as washed down.
Do you think it reminds them of, like, the Saturday Night Wrestling, like the local West Virginia stuff?
Yeah. I have, when I go to ASW, that's over in Madison, I kid you not, almost every show I'll have people come up and talk about when they were kids, they would go to that building to watch, to the Madison Civic Center, to watch wrestling in, like, the 80s, and, you know, they remember seeing Macho Man run through there, and Lanny Poffo. And it's like, okay, now we have wrestling back, and it almost, not nostalgia, but kind of, you know, yeah, it's
like. Well, like, those kids are now dads,
yeah,
basically.
And now they're bringing their kids to it, and it's starting, like, it's continuing the tradition. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about it. One of the coolest things, I'll never forget this, me and my wife a few years back were at a Target in Charleston, and I get out of the car, and there's a truck in front of us that's parked. And this guy just keeps looking at me. And I was like, what is going on? Like, he just, like, just staring me down. And he hollers for me, so I go over to him, and he's like, hey, boys, look at this. And he has two sons, and they hop out of the truck, and he's like, there's the champion right there, blah, blah. And he's, like, going crazy. And, like, he turned into that kid that he was when he went to the shows. And I was like, that is so cool. Like, and I think that's the moment that I realized, like, what we're doing as wrestlers and promoters and bookers and yada, yada, yada. Like, we get into a routine to where it's like, okay, this show's done, next show. Okay, next show. And I think sometimes we need to step back and be like, okay, well, this is stuff that, like, brings families together in its own weird, unique way. Like, fathers are bringing their sons and their daughters and, yeah, because it's not just for boys now. Like, there's a lot of little girl fans. Like, you'll see a bunch of little girls there. And it's like, okay, this is awesome. And they're screaming, hollering, and throwing stuff just like everybody else. So it's really cool to see that it is like a tradition. It is like a family tradition now. And that's really cool.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, there's probably not that much local live entertainment that's in that area.
Especially in Madison?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. I had not really anything. And there's a lot of, you know, it's a town based on coal mines. So everybody's pretty much tight-knit. Everybody knows everybody. And there's not a lot of stuff for people to do. So when, you know, people's at the store and they're like, oh, hey, look, there's a poster. Oh, yeah, John said he's going to be at that show. And it's like, oh, well, I'm definitely going. And it gets people out of the house in a positive light. And they don't have to worry about, like, oh, well, I wonder if someone's going to, you know, one of the wrestlers is going to drop an F-bomb or do something. It's like, no, because it's a family show, but it's not just for kids, you know, and there's something for everybody. So you don't have to worry, like, ASW, like, they don't sell any alcohol or anything like that, so they don't have to worry about taking their kids around people getting drunk. So it definitely gives us something to look forward to, because there's not really, you know, in Madison, I don't even think there's a movie theater.
Yeah.
You know, I think the closest one would be like in Logan, or if they wanted to come to Charleston. I don't think there's anything really for them to do on a Saturday night.
Yeah.
So.
And just like, even when those Hall of Famers were in, they were talking about Madison as a, like Jim Cornette, I think, was talking about Madison as this like locus of wrestling. Why do you think that is?
Because the fans are the reason that wrestling's allowed to live there. They're hardcore about their favorites. They love to hate their, you know, favorite bad guys and cheer their favorite good guys. They're very passionate, and I think that's the only word I can use for those fans. And I'll tell anybody. I was on a podcast when I was in Texas, and they're like, "What's one of the favorite places you like to go to?" Madison, West Virginia, hands down. Like, those fans are nuts, like, in a good way. Like, they get into everything. I mean, they'll cheer, they'll boo, they'll scream. They're not afraid to, because you'll go to some shows and it's almost like some people are afraid to, you know, get into it at first. Mm-hmm. Not in Madison. Like, people are screaming when they're coming through the doors sometimes. And yeah, it gets us all hype even more so. And it kind of gives us that adrenaline to, maybe we will do a dive off the cage and maybe we will do something a little crazy. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, it's the fans, and people in that area, just, they've always seemed to just have wrestling in their blood, and it's still going today. Like, ASW can go, you know, another 15 years, and I believe that they would be completely fine. So yeah, I mean, wrestling has been big there since, I mean, who knows how long. I mean, seriously, like, I think the Poffos ran early 80s in that area, and they drew well. And the people that watched it, like I said, they still live there. They grew up with it. So yeah.
And you, sort of the difference too with WWE or what you see on TV is you have to rely on facial expressions, because you don't have a microphone normally. It's like body language, facial expressions.
Yeah, the WWE have to use, like, the facials as well. But it seems like, and I'm not down in like WWE or any kind of TV outlet, but it seems like a lot of times it's, I'm trying to think how to put this. On the independents, we have to use more of our selling. We have to sell more. We have to show people like our faces even more than they do on TV, because like, if you watch a match on TV, it might go, you know, 6 minutes, 7 minutes. We'll go out there for 15, 20, 30. So we have to definitely, you know, show our faces, make sure that, you know, we're selling the right thing. If someone's working our leg, make sure that we can relate the pain that we're going through in the ring and let the fans see what's happening and let them feel. Because at the end of the day, like, if the fans aren't behind you, like, you might not get booked the next show. Mm-hmm. You have to bring them in. You know, you have to use your body to be able to bring the fans in. So, yeah, I mean, I think we do rely on it more than WWE. Mm-hmm. And it's working, so.
One of the things, so I was at the match where the, he was like the Middle Eastern character, and he was like a Syrian character, and then they're,
yes.
With the camel flag.
Oh gosh, was it, hold on, I'm on a spot now. I'm trying to think who that was. Yes. And see, he has it harder because he had a mask on, so it's hard for them to use that facial expressions. Then they have to use their arms and their legs and over-exaggerate everything even more so.
And someone tried to give him, or the guy wrestling him, someone tried to give him a pocket knife.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah. Okay. Like the wrestler gave, the fan gave the guy. Oh, yeah. When I say they're passionate, they are really passionate. There was there's been a few times that I would go to a show and the bad guys doing their thing, and you know, some old guy's like, "Oh yeah, not today," pulls that knife out. But yeah, I've seen that a few times actually. That's how much people get into it sometimes. Oh my gosh, I've had fans jump in the ring on me. I've seen fans jump in on other guys. I've seen fans pull knives out. One of the craziest things. A lady threw a shoe at me, like took her flip-flop off and threw it at me, and then she threw one in the ring, and then I grabbed it, and I looked the promoter, it was Gary, right in the eyes, and as I launched it and bounced it off the ceiling. And then me and Huff Manley are in the ring, and it was a match that ended up lasting like an hour. Like there was like 25 people involved in the match, but it started out with Huffman and myself, and we get in there and I grabbed her shoe and I threw it because she's already hit me with it and threw it in the ring. And one of the strikes that I do, it's a rolling elbow pretty much. I just do a complete spin and on my way around, I give you a forearm to the face. And as I'm spinning, all I see is like blonde going between us. And I hit him, and when I hit him, like I turned around and I grabbed her because, again, you don't know if they have a knife, if they have a gun. So I grabbed her and I'm like, "Are you kidding me? Like, seriously, guys, can someone come and get this lady out of the ring? Like, come on, let's for real now." But yeah, she was really feeling herself that night. Haven't seen her since though. So yeah.
But with like characters like the Sheik, and then I was at one at Dunbar, and it was like two guys in pink shirts, and their whole gimmick was like they were gay and fabulous, and they like wrestled these, seemed like out of towners who were sort of, they had like a male stripper thing going, and they were like really buff and, you know, greased up. And the crowd loved the big guys in the pink shirts.
Yeah.
So I was sort of thinking about the way, like, I mean, obviously there's a lot of stereotypes but also you can see kind of public opinion. It's almost like a good tracker for public opinion in politics in a way too, because you see the way people respond to these characters.
Yeah. One of my best friends in the business, Shane Storm, he used to do a tag team gimmick called Team Gay, Gorgeous and Young. And this was back in like the mid 2000s, I believe. Okay. And they were, oh my gosh, they had so much heat. Like, it was ridiculous. Like, how, like, they would just walk out, and people back then were like, oh yeah, you're gonna die tonight. And wow. They've had riots started, like, police got involved. But it's cool because, like, wrestling is one of the things to where you can take, let's say, being gay and do like a gay gimmick to where it's like, okay, I'm going to be as flamboyant as possible. And, but the sole purpose is to get a reaction.
Right.
It's really, really a strange thing. That would be someone else for you to talk to. James. Like, he has stories. Uh-huh. Like, it's ridiculous. But yeah, like, there was, oh gosh, what's his name? Like, the liberal or something.
Oh, yeah,
the progressive liberal. Yeah. It's like, and it's also a touchy subject too. Like, politics and religion are always very touchy. Mm-hmm. But to see someone say, okay, hey, look, this is something that's a hot topic, I'm going to take it and I'm going to run with it. It is crazy to see the reactions that they get sometimes, which is cool. Like, yeah. You know, hey, good on them. I don't know, like, you might get some heat that you don't want,
right,
you know,
right, yeah.
But, you know.
Like, almost crosses the reality line.
Yeah, yeah. And see, that's something else, too. You still have those fans that blur the lines. Mm-hmm. So if, you know, say someone in the crowd is very homophobic, and they see someone doing that, I'm going to stab this person tonight in the parking lot. It's like, are you, like, okay.
Right, right.
So sometimes those people have to be a little more cautious when they leave a building.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, I've also noticed, like, a lot of the local West Virginia guys, I, like, went with some friends, and they're like, it's like body positivity for men. Like, there's all different kinds of body types. And people seem to kind of cheer for, like, when they wrestle the, like, greased up buff dudes from out of town, people seem to like the, like, underdog who might not be the most, like, you know, buff or jacked dude.
Yeah, it's always the story of the underdog. Like, that is always going to, it always has and always will be the easiest thing for someone to get behind. And like I said earlier, it's almost like if you're at the bar and you look over, hey, look, this looks like a guy I saw at the bar the other night, or this guy could be sitting right next to me. So it goes back to that, it's easier to relate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I know a few guys that are like, live in a gym, you know, and sometimes they go out there and it's not the reaction that they want, and someone that's 115 pounds will get like that crazy massive, like, insane reaction. And see, that's another thing too. Like, I've had a few guys that were like, cause I train people too. I train, wrestlers, and I had one of my trainees told me, man, I'm only like 155 pounds. I don't know if it's like, look, if you can get over with the crowd, I don't care if you weigh like 87 pounds, like, you'll get booked, you'll have matches, like, you're fine. But that's the key. So no matter what you look like, you have to be able to get over with the crowd. And today's business is, I think, because wrestling's always been like a bodybuilder atmosphere, and it's like, well, you gotta be 6'3", 240 or 250. And now you're starting to see guys that, you know, are maybe, 5'10", 200 pounds, to be able to do stuff that, 15, 20 years ago, it was out of the realm of possibility. And like I said, it's just easier to relate to people. You want that guy to win. You want that guy to, yeah, you know what? Screw him. Like, knock his teeth out. So it's cool, man. It's really cool. And it's not necessarily, like, what you look like now. It's, hey, you can be the average Joe and go out there and be a superstar, you know? So yeah. It's really cool to see. And even in WWE, like, you'll see guys like Daniel Bryan. He's a shorter guy, not, like, the biggest built dude in the world at all. And, like, the fans threw a fit until he got his championship match. Wow. And if you would have took Daniel Bryan 20 years ago and put him in there, he never would have had a main event at WrestleMania, you know? Yeah. Even though he's an amazing worker, it was just a different time. You know, people looked at wrestling as you have to be this certain cookie cutter, mm-hmm. you know. And it's not like that now, which it gives a lot of other guys a lot of opportunities, because there's been wrestlers that may not be 6'5" that are amazing, know how to get over with the crowd, and now they can get a shot at, like, WWE or, you know, even, like, AEW or TNA or Ring of Honor or whatever. Mm-hmm. Not because that they are 6'5", but because they can go out there, connect with the crowd, and put on a really good match. Mm-hmm. So that's what the business needs more of, in my opinion.
Uh-huh. Do you think that's because of a rise in local independence?
Maybe, because I think, like, Daniel Bryan was on the independent scene mm-hmm. before he went to WWE.
Okay.
And he was one of the best. Every you know, one of the worst-kept secrets was every hardcore fan knew, hey, Daniel Bryan is amazing. Like, this guy can go out there. Like, because on the independents, like I said, you don't really have that restriction. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go out there and a promoter says, hey, look, you know, just go out there at least 30, do whatever, just don't break the building down. Mm-hmm. They can go out there and put on a clinic. And once the fans see, like, okay, hold on a second, these guys that don't live in a gym and aren't 6'5" or 6'4" or 6'3", they can do amazing stuff. They can do crazy stuff on the ground. They can do, you know, a lot of amazing stuff. And there's some big guys that can do that too, but I think that it's people's tastes are changing. Mm-hmm. A lot of the fans, they want to see good wrestling, like, not just like Hulk Hogan that, you know, goes out there and is like, what you gonna do, brother? But they want to be entertained. They want they want everything. They want to be entertained. They want to see good wrestling. They want to see high flying. They want to see hard hits. So when a guy gives them all of that, mm-hmm. they don't care what they look like. Mm-hmm. They throw that out the window. And that's what I think wrestling needs more of.
I'm interested in, like, the economics of it. So you work another job, right? You have, like, a...
No, yeah. Wrestling pays the bills. I train people, my merchandise, my pay for wrestling. Yeah, I was a CNA, and...
CNA.
What is it?
CNA.
Yeah, like a certified nursing assistant. Okay. And I was wanting to go back to school for RN, and it's like, you know, and my wife was actually the one that's like, just why don't you give this a shot? Like, you're doing well. You can take that time to get more bookings and, you know, focus more on wrestling. And I was like, oh, man, I don't want to do this. And because it was scary. It's insane. Yeah. But I went ahead. I jumped in it head first and haven't looked back. Wow. So, yeah.
So how long has that been going on?
A little over a year now.
Cool.
Yeah. And It's been really good, so I cannot complain at all. And it's amazing because, like, my daughter's in preschool now, and she has soccer games. So I'm able to, you know, pick her up from school and take her to school and don't have to worry about daycare and all of that stuff. And I get to go out and wrestle a lot more and travel. And, yeah, so I cannot complain at all. Like, I feel very blessed.
What's, like, a average rate for, like, a match?
It just depends on the person. And some wrestlers might get paid a little more than their friend, And if they find that out, then there's heat there. So it's one of those, like, subjects where, like, you could be best friends, but you don't talk about, you know what I'm saying? It really just depends, too. Like, sometimes if you're in something a little bit more hardcore, crazy, you might get a little extra. Or if the crowd's up, if there's more people out there, you might, you know, some of the guys, all the guys, might get a little extra on that, too. But, yeah, that's kind of one of the things to where it's not really talked about among the boys. It's kind of like, you know, when the promoters come in with the pay, if it's not in an envelope, it's one of those handshakes, pass it off thing. So yeah, it just depends. I do well though. Yeah. You know, and it, you know, when I first broke in, this shows the difference too in how wrestling's grown around here. When I first started wrestling, like, I had other jobs, right? And I went, I think, my first year and a half without getting anything. Like, no money at all. So that was a little, like, if I got, like, some gas money, I was like, oh, my gosh, this is awesome. But, yeah, now guys, when they're breaking in, they're getting something starting out. So it's pretty cool to see that. Some of the guys that's coming in now, it's not just like, well, been wrestling for 2 years and I've not made a dime. Now they're starting to, you know, at least get some stuff covered. And once they, you know, it just goes back to being able to get over with the crowd. Once they get over with the crowd, then that's going to, that determines what you make. That determines your pay on wrestling. Because if you're really over, the promoter's going to want you back to bring those people your merchandise. So there's a lot that goes into it.
What about health insurance?
Independent contractor.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's
no.
Probably tough.
A little bit, yeah. I mean, I have health insurance, but of course it's not through, you know, it's not from wrestling.
Right.
So,
right.
Yeah, that's fun.
It's like through your wife?
Yeah. Yeah, that part sucks. If only we had health insurance and wrestling. Oh,
yeah.
Life would be amazing.
Yeah, maybe soon. But let's see. What else do I have here? Yeah, so, like, with folk life, we think about vernacular knowledge, so knowledge that is not formal. People don't learn it in school. And, like, thinking about the way wrestling has that, and also artistic expression. So, like, in the costuming, in the gimmick, in the actual moves. But, yeah, so I guess I'm interested in how you transmit or teach wrestling and how you learned. And, you know, is there some kind of formal book about wrestling moves? Like, how does... Do people have different kind of knowledge that you encounter? Oh, like, no, we call this over here, call that this over here, and in this place in the country, it's called something else or whatever.
Yeah. Like, if I'm training somebody to be a wrestler, like, I'll have, like, steps that they go through. Like, you want to learn how to take a back bump, a front bump, hit the ropes, lock up, you know, and you just go from there. You start building to where it's like, okay, now suplexes and, you know, German suplexes and, you know, all that. But wrestling is one of those, I can get in there with someone that don't necessarily speak, like, English, and for the most part have a match with them without talking. Now, of course, we're not going to be able to do a lot of, like, crazy, insane stuff because, you know, if I don't know that there's a flip pile driver coming, that's kind of hard to do right then and there. But, but yeah, wrestling is, it's, and that's something that a lot of the older wrestlers don't want to admit when we say, you know, it's art. We're creating something from nothing. Like, and I'll always tell the guys too, like, try to create your own stuff. If you like a move, do the move, get good at it, but then try to find a way to make it your own. It's like, I'm trying to think about the whole, anything here that's different than, I know, like, in Mexico, it's like the opposite. So it's like getting adjusted to that. Like the how you work, like the body part. Uh-huh. In most places, it's, you know, you work the left arm, left leg. A lot of stuff in Mexico is just backwards. Yeah. My buddy Shane Storm, he's been to Mexico a few times. Again, someone you would, he's a trip. But, and you know that, okay, so I went to Texas. I worked a lot in Texas. And, okay, so in wrestling, there's a lot of times you see this at the beginning part of the match. It's called chain wrestling. It's hold for hold, counter for counter. Move for move, pretty much, like just grab a hold, get out of that hole without letting go, blah blah blah. And Texas was a little different because, like, Texas, like, they like in the back, this is breaking a wall, but okay, in the back they would say, okay, well, headlock takeover, grab the head, blah blah blah, like they would talk about every step. Mm-hmm. And I was blown away by that. I was like, what are you guys doing? Like, what is happening? One of the guys came up to me and he's like, so here's what we can do tonight. Step 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5 at the chain wrestling. And the way I've always been taught and the way it, you know, is you just go with that. Mm-hmm. Like in the ring, like you just, there's no talking. Uh-huh. You just do that.
Yeah.
So that was a little different.
For but chain wrestling.
Yeah, for chain wrestling. Yeah. Like, if I'm, now I've had matches where we didn't talk anything. Mm-hmm. Like, one of the guys would be late, and I'm in my gear, and he gets there, and he's like, I'm hurrying. It's like, well, there's my music, so I'll see you out there. And stuff like that is when you need to be able to, it's called, you know, walk and talk, you know, call it out there. You need to be able to come up with a match on the fly. And piece it together, make it make sense, and not just like slow and, hey, I got a guy in a headlock for 20 minutes. You got to be able to pick the pace up out there. And some guys today, it's like, oh no, we can always talk about our match in the back from A through Z. And it's like, nope, promise there's going to be a time when you cannot do that. And there's been a few guys to where they're, like, they're fresh out of wrestling training, and they're like, okay, yeah, here's what we can do, and there is just spot, and then someone gets out there and they forget what's next, and they're like just standing there like, I have no idea. It's like, no, oh my gosh, you have to be able to constantly think. You have to, it's a thinking man's game, you know. You have to be able to go out there, and if someone messes up, if someone's throwing you off the ropes and they bend over to, you know, do a back body drop, but they're supposed to do like a clothesline or something like that, it's like you have to be able to take like 2 or 3 steps and be able to fix that without making it look bad. And that's an art. Like that's a, it's an art form. I'm trying to think how to explain it. So yeah, that's one of my big things. It's like before I grab someone and we're talking about training, and I put them out in a match, like we'll be able to go over like, hey, here's how you work on spots and here's how you build a matchup. But we're also going to have these matches before you wrestle to where you're learning how to just call it on the fly. Don't even talk. Just go out there and tell by the way you're moving your arms or the guy's moving his arms, what's happening, what's coming next. Body positioning and all that stuff. So yeah, I don't know if that helps.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. And that's what I like to do. I like to set up my big stuff and all that. But there's, like, I mean, I'll go and have matches to where it's nonstop, step. Mm-hmm. And I mean, that's cool. I mean, I can do that all day, all night. But there's I don't know. It's like free. It's like a free feeling when you can just say, all right, look, we'll just call it out there. I'll see you out there, man. It's good. We'll figure it out. Uh-huh. And to be able to go out there and just not take your time, but like just take everything in, because I feel a lot of times guys they're taught to just do spots, and that's what wrestling is today. It's all spots. But on the independent scene, and I think it would even work good on like the WWE and TV in general. if you're out there and you're just able to take that in and work with that crowd, and then you can go into all this big dives and flips and big move. But there's got to be, in my opinion, there's got to be times to where you're out there and you're just like, look, let's just have some fun. Because if I'm having fun, you're having fun, the crowd's going to know that we're having fun. They're having fun, you know? And if they're having fun, you're going to be remembered when people leave the show. And you're going to get talked about. The promoter's going to hear the fans say, oh, hey, I liked Casey Huffman or Huff Manley. He was awesome. He done this cool thing and he done this. And I'm learning something too. Well, not learning, but I'm realizing this more now, is fans will remember more if I can get out there and do all this crazy fast-paced stuff, but if I just take that second and say something, because I'm usually the bad guy, and say something to them to where people are like, oh my gosh, this guy is an, you know, a-hole, and it's like, okay, there it is. When they leave, that's what they're talking about. Not the fact that I done a cool pile driver or I done this crazy rolling elbow and took a guy's head off. It's that thing that I said or the thing that I done or, you know, the time that I hit a guy and then I just, like, looked at him and kind of, like, smiled and people were like, this guy's evil. And that's what guys are missing today. I think guys are missing the point to where sometimes it's not all about the cool stuff. It's about that connection with the people sitting in the seats. Mm-hmm.
And you identify as a storyteller.
I love it. I love being able to go out there and just tell stories. And that's why I tell my trainees, it's like, hey, guys, look, we're storytellers. Like, at the end of the day, we're storytellers. It's not about me getting all my stuff in, you getting all your stuff in. It's about going out here and telling a story. And when guys forget that, their matches, in my opinion, just aren't – they don't get over as much. That's my when I get out there, there's sometimes to where it's like, especially if I'm working with one of the guys that I've known forever and I've worked 1,000 times, it's like I'll have no idea what we're doing. And once we get out there, I'll be able to tell a story, you know, on the fly. And then next thing you know, the crowd's into it and they're booing and hating my guts and throwing stuff and little ladies are, you know, wishing death threats on me. So yeah, I've had some people say that they wish that my family would die in a car wreck and that they would love to catch me outside after a show and all of this stuff. And then when they do catch me, it's like, man, that was awesome. It's like, okay, buddy, okay. Yeah, right. But yeah, it's like I said, it's like a free feeling to be able to go out there and tell a story and let the fans know what's happening. Like, let them follow along. And make them, like, control their emotions. Like, make them boo and make them cheer. And it's, I don't know, it's like a, whenever I have, like, a really good match like that, I always tell, like, whoever I'm riding with or whoever's in the back, I'm like, I'm on that wrestling high, because it's like an adrenaline rush that just doesn't wear off. So, yeah, wrestling is definitely my drug. It's it's that and caffeine. But yeah, it's That's my favorite thing, just to be able to go out there and just tell a story, a struggle, you know, a good guy versus a bad guy, or, you know, that high school bully versus that nerd that's had enough, and it's like, I'm not a nerd, you know, I'm gonna, you know, and that's what I like to tell stories.
Well, it also seems like the ASW guys, just like, I mean, maybe it's also from hanging out with you guys in the locker room, but it's like, you know, they're not the, like, cool bros. They're not the nerds. But you guys have all kind of, like, an alternative. You're, like, the punk kids in high school or something. You have sort of an alternative coolness.
Yeah. 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 Okay, that's a good way to put it. Yeah, and, you know, that's the cool thing about wrestling, too, man. It's like, I don't know. It seems like no matter what your background is, it's like once you're in, like, a locker room, I don't know, it's like everybody's just, I can't explain it. I guess that's the best way to explain it. It's just, I don't know. It's, yeah, it's like a do-it-yourself attitude in a way, which is kind of punk rock, I guess. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I'm trying to think how to, because that was really good. I never thought about it that way before.
Yeah, I mean, even like the, just like independent wrestling, for me, the the closest analog I have is like DIY venues for music, you know, like underground music, yeah. And you know, it feels similar.
Yeah, and you know, I think that, you know, I was talking about people like that underdog feeling, and I think that also fans like that alternative, that underground wrestling vibe. There was a company in the 90s that got really popular because it was underground. It was like this alternative. They were the punk rock of wrestling, you know, it was ECW. So maybe that's like the independent thing too. That's another cool factor about it. Is it is like a do it yourself. It's punk rock of wrestling. So yeah. I like that.
When there's like a broad, like there's always commentators at ASW shows, where is that? Is that streaming on Facebook or where is it airing?
No, that's filmed for the DVD. They film all of their shows. They have them on DVD. They do put them online sometimes, like on YouTube. Okay. But yeah, that's for the DVDs.
What about Stephen P. New? Should I talk to him? He's like the lawyer who...
Yeah, and when you talk to him, tell him that Rocky said, stop giving out free shirts when I'm trying to sell my shirts. So we have this big thing going on. He'll get a kick out of it. Yeah, I love him. He's a great guy. Fantastic guy. But I do this thing where I put on Facebook, like, hashtag buy my merch or whatever. And he comes with his shirts and he gives them out for free. And my thing is, I always tell him, like, you're taking money out of my pocket. But he's not, but still. But yeah, he's another good one. He knows his wrestling history. Fantastic guy. Don't tell him I said he was a fantastic guy, because okay. Then we have heat. But yeah, he'll be a good one to talk to. I don't know if that answers your question.
Oh, yeah. I was just wondering.
Man, he's one of the sponsors for ASW. And always a cool guy. Like, I was trying to get him in the ring. And we did work something out, and it was pretty fun.
Well, I saw the one where they punched his daughter's paintings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, there's that. I think my buddy Tracy Smothers was involved in that one. Yeah. Yeah, Tracy's amazing. He's awesome.
What's the end game for you? Like, what's your ultimate goal?
I have no idea. I'm just taking it a day at a time, see where it goes. I learned in wrestling, like, never say never. Like, who knows what will happen. If I move on to another area or, you know, sign a contract with somebody, then that would be cool, of course, but if not, I'm perfectly fine with just working independence in the U.S. My end goal, I don't really have an end goal. It's just I'm going with the flow, and it's taking me to some pretty cool places, and I've got to meet a lot of cool people, and I've got to wrestle with people that I looked up to as a child, and I'm happy with it. Like, it's cool. I'm happy where I'm at. Like I said, if I go somewhere else, then hey, so be it. But, you know, you never get your hopes up. You just do what you're doing, focus, grind, 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 and see where it goes.
What are the current storylines in ASW right now?
Right now, I just got my ASW heavyweight title back, working on a few things that's going to be happening soon. So, fans will see that eventually. There's so many things that's getting ready to happen.
So it's October next?
Yes.
October 14th, I think.
I think so. Can find out, but this is one of the weird spots to where it's like, okay, some of the storylines just ended, and now we're getting ready to go into you know, the next chapter. And that's what independent wrestling is, almost like episodic television, where, you know, it's a never ending story. You know, it can go on and just keep telling stories and stories and stories. Oh man, there's so many cool things about to happen. Like, oh, there's so many cool things. But as soon as I spill it, Gary's like, "Are you kidding me?" October 12th is the next one. Yes, and that's going to be a fun match, actually, that I'm in. A nasty, brutal match, but it's going to be a fun match. We're actually inside of a steel cage, but fans are bringing weapons, so we're taking the weapons and putting them inside the steel cage. So it's going to be bloody, and we're going to be jumping off the top of the cage. I just have a feeling someone's falling or slamming or jumping off of that. Wow. So that's going to be, it's going to be fun. So. Wow.
Oh, yeah, so you guys also bring a lot of WWE people. Yeah. Like, so is there still, there's still a circuit for, like, retired folks?
Oh, yeah, yeah. And it's, in the, like I said, in the independent circuit's doing really well. So, like, a lot of the people that's no longer with WWE can, it's not like a death sentence when they get fired or they ask for their release, because they can go to the indies and make a fantastic living, you know, working here, working there. And the cool part about it is, you know, we're independent contractors, and now they're free of their contract, so they can be their own boss. They can, hey, I don't want to do something on the 13th, so I'm not doing anything on the 13th. Or, and like I said, they're able to make money. They're able to still get in there and do whatever it is, whether it's manage, wrestle, you know, sign autographs. But yeah, there's definitely a place for them on the indies once they're done with WWE.
Who designed your posters? They're really good.
Okay, yeah, that's not me. I think Gary has some guy. Who was it? Okay, well, I think one of his guys is Chris Chandler. He designs a few of the posters. And then he has another guy, I think, that still does them. And I think he lives in PA. I think it's Aaron Draven. But I'm not 100% sure on that right now. But, yeah, I think the poster that's happening for October, that's Chris Chandler. And he does amazing posters. And that's something important, too. It's like fans have to, if they're walking past a gas station and they see a poster, they got to be able to tell that it's wrestling. Some people would just be like, here, piece of paper, we're good. And it's like people, you have to grab their attention for them to see what's happening and make them want to come to the show. And that's one thing ASW is really good at is the poster. The artwork is awesome. So,
Well, I think those are my questions. Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I mean, it's crazy because you have West Virginia, that's a coal mining area, and you know it's not like the richest state in the country, but they're continuing to come to shows. They're continuing to support wrestling. You know, it's their childhood. Like, as long as they continue to do that, like, wrestling has a very good life in this state. Out of all the places that I've wrestled, like, West Virginia is my favorite place to work. It's amazing. Like, the people are awesome. Even the ones that wish death threats on me, but no, it's really good. And I've been doing this. This year makes this December 26th makes 10 years that I've been wrestling, and because of wrestling in West Virginia, I've been able to travel. I've been able to meet and work with some of the best in the world and the people that I've looked up to before I got into the business, and it's because of the fans in West Virginia. So yeah, I just hope that, you know, next year at this time, you know, it's still like this, and yeah, we can just keep bringing wrestling to the state. Mm-hmm. So,
and do you think there's like a particular, like, it has a particular hold in Appalachia? Like, I don't know, maybe because of Smoky Mountain Wrestling and Saturday Night Wrestling, yeah. And there's a history.
Yeah, it's I think wrestling is one of those things where it's in their blood. You know, they grew up with it. It's a tradition as old as the mountains, you know? And that's why I don't think wrestling will ever leave West Virginia. And I think that's why it's going to continue, in my opinion, it's going to continue to grow. People have always, like I said, there's just something special about the wrestling fans in West Virginia. You know, they grow up with it. They, like, it's in their lives. You know, you'll go to Madison and go to Kroger, and you'll hear people talk about what happened at ASW in aisle three, you know, which is pretty cool. And, like, just going to, like, different places and getting stopped at, like, a Walmart or something. It's like, and just hearing, like, the fans' stories, that's when it starts to sink in. It's like, nah, this, it's who they are for the most part. It's amazing.
Cool. Well, thanks so much.
Oh, no problem.